Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is SMPE Internet Service Retrieval. Today's presenter is Greg Daines. Greg has worked for IBM for over 20 years, all in the area of COS installation, packaging, and deployment of products and services. He is currently responsible for simplifying the installation, migration, and deployment of COS software. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Greg.
Thank you, Joseph. On today's presentation, I'm going to cover relatively old function of SMPE, of Internet Service Retrieval, or the Receive Order function. There are several different ways that customers can get service, and Receive Order was introduced in 2005 as part of SMPE 3.4. So we'll be covering a little bit of an overview of what the current capabilities are for customers to get service, as well as the details of how to use SMP Internet Service Retrieval. Joseph, if you could skip to chart 3. I'll go over the agenda. So we'll talk about the current delivery methods for customers to get service. We'll talk about the functions that SMP introduced in SMP 3.5 that introduced the receive order function. We'll go over in detail what that function is, as well as the command syntax and how it is processed. That's the chart 3. We'll then talk about the setup that's required by somebody to use the receive order command or Internet Service Retrieval. We'll talk a little bit about people who have used electronic delivery of service on ZOS before might have thought that they needed to have crypto setup or ICSF, and starting with SMP 3.4, that's no longer the case, so we'll talk about what you can use instead. And then in a lot of the backup material, because we don't have a lot of time on this particular presentation, I put in information on some specific APARs that are useful for SMP 3.4, as well as SMP 3.5 enhancements to this particular function, as well as some common scenarios to acquire service and how you could use receive order during those scenarios. Why don't we skip to chart 5? Okay, thank you. So today, when somebody tries to order service as a customer, they can use many different portals or offerings and websites to acquire service. For corrective service, and I'll talk more about what corrective service is in a second, but for corrective service, they can use a fee offering called IBM Service Link. It's off of access through IBM Link, and there's an SRD function that's an easy way to acquire service, particularly if you know the service that you want, that you need. Under Resource Link, which is another website, their customers can get typically hardware maintenance, software maintenance for hardware, and they click on a particular PTF, and then they get brought to a technical support portal, or they get asked if they want to use Shop C-Series or if they want to use Service Link. But through Resource Link, they get access to downloading individual fixes. The customers still call the support center and ask for fixes to be delivered, but this is fewer and fewer. Very few customers get service delivered physically anymore. Shop C-Series has the capabilities, many different capabilities to get service. It's an internet website where you need an ID and to be authenticated, and then you can download individual fixes or preventive service as well. Receive Order is what we'll be talking about today. And there's a tech support portal that anyone could get on and do searches and request individual fixes. That's in the process of being shut down. So we're going to be encouraging customers to use either Receive Order, Shop Z-Series, or Service Link in the future. Some people might have known that there was something called the Service Update Facility, or SUF. That's been withdrawn for several years now. But if you're used to a client-server application, the Receive Order command now is a client-service application where the client is the ZOS host, and the server is a system operating, an IBM system operating in Boulder. For preventive service, again, there have been a lot of withdrawals over this last several years. Customers in the U.S. can still get something called an ESO by request, where they can specifically request something like the old put tapes. Again, not many people do this. Instead, more people are ordering service by Shop C-Series or using Receive Order. Or they're getting service when they actually need it for the service that they want to install. We used to have CBPDO subscriptions. Can't get those anymore today. You used to have put tape or ESO subscriptions. You can't really get those anymore. So for preventive service, we're really encouraging customers to either use Shop C-Series or S&P Receive Order. On chart 6, describing what comes in a corrective service package. Corrective service is service that the customer orders because they want to fix a specific problem. This is a problem that they themselves have experienced, so they know, but because they talked with the support center or did a search by themselves, they identify what APARs or PTFs actually fix the problem. They can request corrective service by either an APAR list or a PTF list, and what will happen is if they give an APAR list, we'll resolve and provide the PTFs for those APARs. If they provide things like a service inventory, we know which FMIDs those PTFs are for. If they don't provide a service inventory, we give them the PTFs for all the applicable FMIDs for that particular APAR. Through most of the different mechanisms, they can request requisites to be delivered. If they provide an inventory, we know what requisites they need, and we give them exactly what service is missing. If they don't provide an inventory file, typically they get 90 days of requisite service if they request it. Electronic packages tend to be compressed so that we send less information over the network. Some of the deliverables use GymZip or an S&P zipping program to compress the package. Other deliverables use the TERS utility to compress the package. All deliverables that are delivered electronically are compressed. However, if somebody requests a tape, it comes in native format, uncompressed, on tape. And all corrective service orders come with a 2-year hold data file, and hold data is S&P's way of getting asynchronous metadata about the PTFs. Next chart, Justin. Preventive service is in a similar format, and customers can either request what we'll call critical service, that is hypers or PTFs that resolve PTFs in error, or PEs. They can request recommended service. In some of the deliverables, they can request all service, and then they get all service up to the day of the order. Some of the deliverables have a means to acquire service based on what you're licensed for. Others have based on a service inventory that you provide. For some of the offerings, you have the ability to specify a starting date. However, if you provide a inventory file, then you get all service based on the starting date that was provided in the inventory file. Okay, the packages for preventive service are packaged up and compressed just like the corrective service orders, and just like corrective service orders, they come with a 2-year hold data file. Next chart, Joseph.
And moving on to slide number 8.
This is just a brief overview that says that each of the different Level 3 areas around the world will create their own PTFs and APARs. They'll update, retain, sometimes using SPA, sometimes using other tools. And what will happen is software manufacturing in Boulder will get everybody's PTFs, will validate everybody's PTFs, and depending on the service process that's used, they'll create a fixed package, and that fixed package will get compressed, or if it's electronic, or it will be copied to a tape and sent in the mail if it's physical. So the key point here is that IBM Software Manufacturing in Boulder is using everybody's APARs from all the different Level 3 areas. It's using the retained information to create metadata, and depending on what delivery mechanism you're using to acquire service, you will actually get a different package format, and it will get actually sent, but all package formats are able to be installed using SMPE. Next chart, Justin. The most common way people had been using prior to 2005 getting electronic service was probably SRD using ServiceLink. However, that wasn't entitled, and we wanted to get rid of some of the physical delivery mechanisms. So the entitled delivery that what most customers used and what we promoted was something called Shop Z-Series. Shop Z-Series is a tool that you can actually order products, either CBPDO format, server pack format, or even fee deliverable format. But in addition to that, they have the ability to get service through that same web application. In order to do that, the customer would create an inventory file, log on to Shop Z-Series, upload the inventory file, at least for most of the ways you get service. They would select what type of service they want, either corrective or preventive. If they request preventive, what kind of preventive service do they want to get? IBM would then manufacture the order. The user would either continually request status from Shop Z-Series or wait for an email. They would get notification that the package was manufactured. They'd get information on how to actually download the package. And then they would use something called SMP Receive from Network to actually download, uncompress, and receive the package into their global zone. Okay, as you can see, there are a lot of different steps. Many of them are manual, and there was potential opportunity for error or opportunity at least for distraction. Next chart, Jessa. Okay, on slide 10, it shows that for the other common servers portals, namely ServiceLink and support tech support portal, there are, again, approximately six steps that the user has to do, some of which may be actually combined. But, again, it was manual. The intent of this was to try to automate some of the service acquisition process. So why don't we jump to slide number 12? Okay, so really slide number 12 starts what I was hoping would be the meat of this presentation, is to talk about the SMP receive order command that got introduced with SMP 3.4. Now, just to level set real quickly, SMP 3.4 was introduced with ZOS release 7 back in 2005. This past September, SMP introduced SMP 3.5 with ZOS release 10, and 3.5 can actually run on all supported ZOS releases. The receive order command is still there in SMP 3.5. It's actually been enhanced in SMP 3.5, but this function has been around since 2005, and like many optional functions in any product, customers don't necessarily use it. So hopefully this will give you background on function that you can recommend to customers or you could use yourself to actually find a better way to acquire service. So we'll talk about the receive order command. So with the receive order command, it provides one job to actually create an inventory file, upload the inventory file to IBM, submit a service order, wait for the order to be manufactured, actually manufacturing the order, compressing the order, downloading the order, and then storing the order in an SMP NTS data set. And unless you specify an option not to do it, it would actually unzip the package and actually stage the package in your global zone, ready to be installed through an apply command. So one job can do all those steps, so you no longer have to do many different iterations or sit and wait or constantly pull to be able to find out when an order is ready. Furthermore, because it's a batch job that runs on your system, you can tie it to like a job schedule or even a cron command to be able to run it on a regular basis, so you can totally automate the service acquisition process. Why don't we go to slide 13. Okay, so as part of the solution, as I mentioned earlier, we created a SMP client-server application where SMP on the ZOS host is the client, and we talked to a IBM automated delivery server in Boulder that happens to be the server that controls and packages the delivery. Access to the server is controlled through some security mechanisms, so you're going to need to actually have a certificate. And we'll talk more about getting the user certificate later. They're generated in a secure format, and they tie the service request to a particular customer number. Okay, S&P will access the certificate and pass their certificate in to IBM in order to get the request. Why don't we show this more in, I'm more of a picture person, so we'll go to the next slide, slide 14, which shows the same kind of process more in graphical view. So what will happen first, if you can look at where the first circle one is, when I had animation, it was a little easier to see. But if you look on the left-hand side of the chart, what happens is S&P creates the inventory map. So it goes to the S&P CSI. It identifies all the different PTFs and FMIDs that are installed in a global zone and one or more target zones. And it will identify that information and provide it in a format that's pretty compressed, as we call it, a bitmap. It will also go out to the security database and extract the user certificate and pass that in as well. And then if you go to step two, S&P, that S&P job will do, using HTTPS, transfer that information over to the server, which is running in Boulder. So the IBM automated delivery request server is running in Boulder, and it's sitting there waiting for a request from anyone, and it will be using a HTTPS secure transmission from the host pushed to the server in order to submit the request. At that point, the request is then sent to manufacturing, and during manufacturing, the surface package is created, and we compress the package, and we put it in a format that then can be sent back to the customer, and then S&P is notified that the package is ready, and it does an FTP GET under the covers in order to transfer the file back to the host, where it's then stored in the S&P NTS data set, and then would ultimately get stored into the global zone. So you can see it's a client-server application where all the requests are initiated from the ZOS host. Things are passed through to the IBM server using secure transmission, and the transmission of the package is done through an FTP GET. At this point, it's not doing secure FTP, it's just doing an FTP GET, but it's a GET and not a push, so the information is being requested from the host, not being sent to the host. In addition to that, during the FTP, you have the ability to specify firewall commands if you need to get through your firewall. And during the HTTPS, you have the ability to specify proxy information if you need to get through a proxy server. Okay. Why don't we go to the next chart, chart 15? So on chart 15, talks a little bit more details of the receive order command itself. Receive order can be used to acquire corrective service. You can either specify a list of PTFs or a list of APARs. Again, if you specify a list of APARs, you'll get the PTFs that resolve those APARs based on the service inventory that's provided by the receive order command itself. For preventive service, you have the ability to request PTFs, whether they be hyper PTFs and PE, which are the critical service, recommended PTFs, which is the latest RSU source ID service plus all the critical service, or you can request all available service. There are a number of customers who just want to get whole data, and they can use receive order now to get just the latest whole data file, which is a 2-year whole data file that contains error holds and now fixed category holds as well. Whether you order corrective service or preventive service, you'll always get the 2-year whole data file, but you can request just the whole data file if you want. And one of the things that I've been promoting when I talk about service acquisition around the world, it seems, is that some people are under the misimpression that just because you acquire service, you have to install service. A lot of our customers wanted this receive order function the way it was designed because they want to be able to acquire service on a regular basis and then filter out of the service that they acquired what service they want to install. So I have a lot of customers that are telling me that they either acquire all service or all critical service on a relatively regular basis, but then pick and choose which of that service they want to install. Some people acquire the latest RSU service, but then wait a month in order to install it. So, but they're acquiring the latest RSU each month. So there are advantages to acquiring more service than what you're actually going to install. In particular, you have the service available in case you need it for corrective service. It means you also have some of the prerequisites that you might need if you needed to do corrective service or you wanted to turn on a function later. And the other thing is if there is an emergency, you don't have to access one of IBM's portals to get service. In fact, there's going to be an outage this weekend where you're not going to be able to get service. So acquiring service on a regular basis allows people to avoid such outages. So let's go more into the actual details of the receive order command, slide 16. This shows you the syntax where you can say content and you either say PTFs with a list of PTFs, APARs with a list of APARs, critical, recommended, all, or whole data. As I said before, you select one of those, whichever one you want. Notice that you say recommended. You don't identify which level of recommended service you want to get. You'll get the latest recommended service. You don't have the ability to pick and choose what RSU level you want to get to. You have the ability to limit what zones you want to look at. So, again, I said we're going to build a bitmap based on what zones you tell us. The default will be all target zones in a global zone. You can tell it to wait a certain amount of time. My job that I have here runs with no limit just because I don't care how long it runs. The transfer-only option says just send the information to the SMP MTS. Do not receive it into the global zone. I don't use that option, but there is an option enabled to do that. We'll talk more about the order server and client operands in a little bit. There's also the ability to delete the package once it's successfully processed. So this will actually take things out of the SMP MTS data set that have been successfully received. If you want to do good hygiene and you're not going to try to receive the same file into multiple global zones, using delete packages is usually a good procedure. Okay. Next slide, Jessa. On slide 17, as I said, we'll talk more about the order server and client operands. What those operands specify is how to tell SMP information about things like the location of the server, the identification of the client user certificate that you're going to provide. The client data set has options for both Java as well as networking, whether it's using HTTP or FTP. So this is how you would either provide your options or be able to specify how to connect to IBM and pass in information to IBM. Now, in the samples that I'll show in the remaining parts of the presentation, I always have these in line. So I'm using these operands to point to a DD card that I then also have in the same job stream. If you wanted to, you could have them point to a DD def and have a data set that contained all this information as well. It's just it was harder to show that information in a DD def in this presentation. So if we go to slide 18, you'll see a sample job that has the receive order command in green, and it has an order server operand pointing to an order server DD card where the order server information is passed in. And you'll see the developer calls it XML-like because it's modeled after XML, where we provide the information about the URL to connect to, the key ring, and the certificate to be provided in the order server information. And in the client information, you could pass in a lot of different information. In this case, it's passing in a class path and a Java home, a way to find where Java runtime resides as well as where SMP was installed into. Okay. The other thing I'll point out is that initially a lot of customers, when they first tried to run receive order, did not have a region operand either on their step or their job. And because SMP was now using Java a little more extensively, they were running out of region. Again, in my sandbox environment, we run with region equals 0M. Next slide. On slide 19, you'll see that when the receive order command is run, and actually as soon as it's the order is actually received in the server in Boulder, SMP will get an acknowledgement and create a global zone entry for defining that order. The order will have a number. It will define what you specified as the content parameter on the operand on the receive command. It will provide a status. The status will typically either be pending or downloaded, and then it will have information. So for a downloaded order, it will have information as when the order was downloaded, the user ID that was processing the order, and it will have a package ID information that will give you the member within the S&P MTS or the directory within the MTS of where the order resides. Okay, next slide, slide 20. For a pending order, you have much of the same information, but since the order wasn't downloaded, there isn't a time date for when it was downloaded. In addition to that, it hasn't gone to the MTS yet, so you'll have information from the order server data set that could get passed in. Now, when this function was first provided, there was a lot of thought that customers would submit an order, and if it didn't finish, they would just do a submit a receive pending order, which is on the slide, the next slide. So if you go to slide 21, you'll see that there's a receive order pending that you could do to actually, in essence, complete that prior order. In reality, what we've seen from customers is that they'll just submit a new receive order command because instead of to try to continue the old order, either they've changed their mind on what they want to get or they just want to resubmit it because it's been automated and it's easier for them to submit the same job than it is to try to edit that job. So if you do a receive order, since the inventory you sent in hasn't changed, you'll get the order will complete with the latest information and get the latest hold data. So we haven't seen a lot of people use receive pending orders, but there is that kind of capability. Okay, slide 22 just shows you an example of the receive pending order. Again, I don't see a lot of people using that function. Slide 23, we had the capability with receive from network to do a receive from MTS, and this just shows you that a receive order can also be received from MTS, and instead of put in the order name that you got from either the global zone entry that we showed earlier, or in this case, you could see the subdirectory created in the SAP MTS. So either one could be specified on the receive from MTS command, but this assumes that you either did transfer only or it means that you didn't do delete package and then you wanted to process that same package into another global zone. Okay. Continuing on to slide 24, you'll see that for the PTS that are actually received during the receive order command, they'll get an extra source ID associated with the order. So if you knew in this case that the order was ORD00080, then you could do a apply check source ID with that order number to try to apply the PTS within a particular order. Where this might be most useful is if you did a corrective service order, you could then try to put all the corrective service on using the source ID associated with the corrective service order. Alternatively, you can still use the old operands like select or other source IDs. Okay. On slide 25, from a cleanup perspective, after receive order is successful, you'll have an entry in the global zone, you'll have a directory in the MTS, so you could either clean it up using UCLN and using Unix commands to delete the file from the MTS, or SMP has an automatic cleanup based on a retention value. The default retention value is 180 days. The other key thing is there's a relatively old APAR on S&P 3.4 rolled into 3.5 that will delete the packages when order entries are deleted or purged. Okay, and again, the delete package operand will actually clean it up after a successful receive. Continuing on to slide 26, some of the things that are interesting notes is that multiple people can run the receive order command at the same time, just like any other receive command. It's serialized on the global zone, so you can't have two people updating the same loan at the same time. Wait for DSN can be used to have them wait in line for the command to finish. Typically, an SMP receive order command can last anywhere from about 5 to 10 minutes to 2 hours, depending on what it is you're processing and how busy the server is. I use cron job to actually submit a job daily to get the latest hold data. Based on that, I do receive order every day or every working day. Actually, every day, I think, to get the latest hold data. We have a number of customers that are using receive order to get all available service daily. I have other customers that are getting critical service weekly. I have a handful of customers that are using a job scheduler to get it, the latest RSU monthly. So, as I said, with a job scheduler, you could tie this to basically get the service acquisition task out of a system programmer's hands and make the service available, so all you have to now worry about is installing it. Continuing on chart 27, we found that it was important to extend the SMP ISPF dialogues so that you could have a means for managing orders that you get. So you can see the status of multiple orders, you can find the details, and you can delete potentially orders. So on slide 28, rather, you show that the SMP primary panel, starting in SMP 3.4, has another option called order management, option number 7. If you choose option 7, you'd see a panel similar to what's on slide 29, which shows a list of different orders. Some of them were downloaded, some are pending, some were for whole data, some were for critical, some were for APARs or PTFs. In this case, Kurt ran, this was a picture of his panels, and he did an RSU back in 2005. It showed that the latest RSU at the time was 2005 RSU 0501. That will show you the actual RSU value when you said recommended. So instead of just showing you that you have recommended service orders, it will actually show you the RSU that you actually download. So the order management dialog is pretty useful if you want to see what orders you've managed or have actually downloaded. If you do it daily, this dialog tends to be less useful unless you want to see what you got. Okay, if we skip to slide 31, we'll start talking about installation. Installing 3.4 in this particular case, the only thing new was that SMP started to ship into the ZOS Unix file system. SMP had not done that before, so there are paths that need to be defined, there are sample jobs that need to be defined, and there's a new distribution library to support the Unix file system parts. On the next slide, slide 32, it shows there were no particular migration actions going to SMP 3.4. However, going to SMP 3.5 does require the upgrade command. So if you've not used receive order yet and you have SMP 3.4, you can use it. If you are going to SMP 3.5, I encourage you to, when you go to SMP 3.5, read the documentation, and once you're sure that you're only going to use SMP 3.5 to process the global zone from that point forward, to use the upgrade command, because then you can process things like the fixed category holds and have long source IDs that you can't do with SMP 3.4. Okay? With every SMP release, there are coexistence PTFs, so 3.4 has these lists. 3.5 has a different list of PTFs that you would need. You need to put them on your old level system. If you're only running SMP 3.4 at this point in time, you don't need coexistence 434 itself, but you will need coexistent service when you go to S&P 35. From a slide 33 perspective, we'll talk about dependencies. As I said earlier, prior to S&P 34, when you did electronic delivery, whether it be products or service, using S&P received from network, there was a dependency on having crypto hardware and having a crypto LPAR set up. Starting with S&P 34, we enabled it so that if you have the hardware, it will be used and you'll be run a little quicker. But if you don't have it, it will be using software. In addition to that, we now need Java to do some process some of the S&P Java workload. So S&P is going to need access to Java. It could be either 31-bit or 64-bit. It could either be release 4 or version 4, version 5, or version 6. Version 6 not on chart. These are old charts. When you use it, again, remember that you're going to need to have more memory. I don't know how much memory you're going to use. Again, we use zero meg here to get whatever is available on the server. Okay, the next chart, chart 34. Configuration and setup is where of the people who were struggling using receive order over the last couple of years, this is where they've struggled. Not so much the security setup as much as the networking setup, but there is you need to register to use and obtain a user certificate. We'll go through those steps. You need to load the certificate into your security database, whether it be RACF or a vendor product. You need to make sure that the Java runtime is set up and you have access to the application classes. And then you need to have your HTTP and FTP network definitions. A lot of this is written up in the S&P e-users guide. Whether it's for 3.4 or higher, you could use the latest e-users guide to get the latest information. Okay. Let's go into each of these in a little bit more detail. On slide 35, talk about obtaining a certificate. You sign on to Shop Z-Series, click on Creating Orders, pick whichever customer number you're doing this for, pick package category of automated delivery certificates, enter a phrase, remember the phrase, and then you're going to ultimately download the certificate, upload the certificate to your workstation. And after that, it must be stored in a sequential data set, and the data set must have a record format of VB. On slide 36, this shows the first of three slides of a Shop Z-Series session where you would log into Shop Z-Series, create a new order, and from the pull-down, you'd pick the automated delivery certificates. If you look on this same pull-down, the first thing was service. This is how people used to make service orders if they're not using receive order. Okay, so you click on automated delivery certificate. You hit a click. You get to what's shown on slide 37. At this point, you'd enter your phrase and you'd confirm your passphrase. You'd want to have a phrase that you can remember. Mine has mixed case and it even has a number in it. But it is a phrase and you'd put it in, and you're going to want to remember the phrase. And then if you hit enter at that point or hit continue at that point, you'll get to 38. And 38 will tell you that you need to download, whether you use PCOM or FTP to download. It needs to transfer to a data set on a COS host system. It must be a sequential data set. And again, it must be in DB format. So that's how you use Shop G-Series to obtain a certificate. Go to the next slide, slide 39. At that point, you need to then get the certificate defined to your security database. Now, back when this was first introduced, we had a number of customers running ZOS release 5 and below, and they needed to also download and get a certifying agent authority certificate and connect it to a key ring. Starting with ZOS release 6, RACF can do that itself. So you can see here the RAC DCERT commands to define the certification authority certificate. And then on the next slide is the definitions to actually define the client or user certificate to a key ring. For customers who use ACF2 or Top Secret, they have tech docs that describe each of these steps in excruciating detail. When I present this at user conferences, I actually attach those tech docs. I got permission from CA to provide those. However, I'd encourage people to go and get the latest copy of those tech docs to get the latest information to define it. As far as the RACF commands, these are all defined in that SMPE users guide appendix, so you can actually see the commands you have to use, or you can model after these as a sample. Okay, on slide 41, some notes that you need to be aware of is that you really only have to do the certification authority once. As far as the user certificate, that will have to be done every year. They expire after 1 year. If you do receive order fairly regularly, within the 30 days of expiration, you'll start getting warning messages. At that point, you can go out and get a new certificate, load it into your database, and you're good for another year. Continuing on slide 42, going to, again, the client data set can be used to specify and override where Java resides, so you can specify a Java home. There was a PTF, again, an old PTF that allowed you to specify via DD statements as opposed to environment variables. So you'd want to use the DD card specified on the toward the bottom of the slide. Go to slide 43, and you'll see the FTP, HTTP options can be specified. The HTTP options can be specified. Again, you may not have to specify anything inside IBM. I don't have to specify anything. But if you need to go through a different HTTP proxy or SOC server, then you can certainly specify those. So you'd really want to contact your network administrator to see if there are any HTTP overrides that you need to specify through the client data set option. On slide 44 shows the FTP options. More and more customers seem to have to specify a user and password, so you have the ability to do that going through a specifying additional firewall commands. Now, the HTTP and particularly the FTP options are similar to receive from network. So if you're using receive from network today, you should be able to use those same overrides in receive order. Okay. So lastly, I want to cover on slide 46 the ICSF or crypto mitigation, so to speak. As I said, prior releases of SMP for electronic transfer required the use of crypto. Starting with 3.4, you no longer need to have crypto, but if it's there, you'll get a performance benefit. But if it's not there, we'll use Java Message Digest classes instead. So SMP will use software to do the SHA-1 hashing. And this is true for whether you're using receive order, receive from network, or even the server pack downloads. So you want to make sure that you, if you don't have crypto set up, that you can still use receive order. Again, I'm pointing out on the bottom of the chart a relatively old APAR that was there in case you didn't have a crypto module in the linked list. Starting on slide 48, we'll start the summary. So hopefully you've seen that the receive order command provides the ability for you to either on demand or through an automated means, request either corrective service or preventive service. All different options of preventive service are supported. There's a self-service or a subscription capability if you tie it to a job scheduler. Many different jobs can run at the same point. So if you have an operating system person and a DB2 person with different global zones, they both can run the jobs at the same time. Our server can handle many different requests at the same time. The global zones, what's used for serialization. On the next slide, slide 49, you'll see that you can override the delivery is using FTP. It's an FTP get, so there's not something being pushed to the host. It's being requested by the host. HTTPS is used for sending the information securely to IBM, so that's over a secure transport. There is one-time setup charge for networking, potentially for crypto if you're going to use crypto. It's not required. The security definition, some of them are one-time, some of them are going to be annual just to load down a new certificate. The inventory file is used so that we know starting points for preventive service orders and so that we can not ship you stuff that you already have, so that you're only getting things that you need, and so that when you make a request that all requisites are also shipped at the same time. I also included on slide 50 a table so you could see a comparison of how receive order compares to some of the other common service delivery offerings, particularly Shop C-Series, Tech Support, and ServiceLink. And you'll see that when receive order was designed, it kind of took the best of all the other offerings and included that in receive order. The only thing receive order can't do is it doesn't deliver physical media. You can only get electronically delivered service using receive order. So that concludes the bulk of the material. On slide 51, I'll just describe what's also included in backup material. First, I have two different sets of web pages that you can find a lot of information about the service deliverables and the information presented in this particular presentation. Then I have a chart on recommended APARs and another chart on some means that S&P 3.5 enhanced this particular function. In particular, S&P 3.5 made it easier so that you always got whole data and so that you potentially got a subset of your order if a subset could be filled if the entire order of a corrective service order, if some of those APARs or PTFs were not available, you'd still get the ones that were. So that's the type of enhancements. And then, as I said earlier, in the last set of charts in the backup material, I provide a bunch of scenarios for corrective and preventive service orders, and I show how receive order can be used for both corrective and preventive orders. So jumping to slide 65, that shows for KIX, links to a number of different websites that provide valuable online resources for the KIX transaction server. The KIX transaction server website offers a variety of different technical information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up on a learning curve quickly. Webcast for KIX and Avegamon links to webcast and conference information. You can visit the KIX featured document link for the most requested documents as well as those identified as valuable in helping answer your questions related to KIX. And the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly emails for products that are of interest to you. I also should mention that there is a older version of this presentation with speaker notes available on the IBM Education Assistant for the ZOS operating system under the general service category. At this point, I'd like to turn the meeting back to Joseph.
Thank you, Greg, for a great presentation. At this point, Marjorie, we would like to open the line for questions.
We'll take our first question from Marcos Villasenor with Georgia Department of Labor.
Yes, hello. Is it mandatory to use the Unix system file services as far as storing the data, or could that just be a plain Jane sequential file?
What S&P does for all electronic orders, whether it's received from network or server pack electronically delivered orders or receive order, is it uses a Unix file system as the temporary store in order to, in essence, run the gym unzip command to then get it into the, ultimately in the global zone and the S&P PTS. So, yes, the Unix file system needs to be used for the S&P NTS. You could have a huge file system on a pack that's just temporary, but the things are only there while the process, the file is transmitted and unzipped. After that, it's not used. But
thank you.
No, you can't use a sequential file and you can't use a PDF for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, that is star one for a question. We'll take our next question from Mike Giaquinto with Wells Fargo.
Hi, and thank you for taking the time to do this for us. I have a question about if we were to automate this process, is there a particular day or time of day or day of the week or day of the month that would make most sense or other days that won't make any sense to do? For instance, is it down from 1 to 2 in the morning or do all maintenance changes go in by Friday at 3 p.m., so we'll wait until after 3 p.m., et cetera?
So I guess the first question, Mike, would be, would be what type of maintenance are you going to request? If it's corrective service, then obviously whenever you need it would be fine. There's no better day or time. But corrective service isn't something you can automate. If it's all service, then, again, there's no good time. But if it's recommended service, you're going to want to do that once a month, and you'd want to wait till the second week of the month. So usually the first week of the month is when things will get recommended. If you wanted to do it the middle of the month, that would be even better. And if it's critical service gets introduced daily, it's then a question of how frequently do you want to process it. I'm not sure that there's one day better than others. We do have a potential for a outage window typically on a Sunday, so I would not pick Sunday to be when you get it. But other than that, there is no better or worse day. It really depends on what it is you're trying to acquire.
I have one more follow-up question, and that is with the RSUs. I'm not sure if you're involved with CST and RSU so much.
Yep.
Let me ask the question. There's always been the recommendation that the quarterly RSUs are the better tested RSUs than the monthlies. And then I've heard recently that June and December are more thoroughly tested or more completely tested than the other quarterlies. So is that true, or how do the quarterlies get tested?
Well, technically, a quarterly RSU is three monthly RSUs. It's not that they're tested more thoroughly. They're tested the same tests are run three different times. The service recommendation technically is RSU asterisk, take the latest RSU. Okay. As far as June and I don't think any one quarter is any more tested or less tested. In this past December, there might have been some things that were less tested by accident, but it had more to do with vacations and winter than it did for anything else. But typically, no. Every month we run through the same test. Each cycle within CST, each quarterly cycle, we tend to look to see how we could beef up the workload. So last year's spring or first quarter CST cycle and this year's first quarter CST cycle, hopefully we have more tests than this year's because we got more workload and potentially we even have more products. But look at the CST website to see what products are in, but on any given quarter, any quarter should be tested as thoroughly as any other quarter, and those same tests are run on a monthly. It's just the amount of service that we introduce on a monthly is different. We don't catch up on service on monthlies. We only introduce critical service on monthly boundaries.
Great. Thank you very much.
No problem.
And at this time, it appears we have no further question. I'll turn the call back to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, Margie. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.